Back together again, you and I chatting it up. Big show, brand new week, Monday, April 7th, 2025 on Connecticut Today, where I wondered if all the anti-Trump protesters across the state the previous weekend were out of sync with the rest of the country. CBS News reporter Zach Udack and University of New Haven finance lecturer David Sacco both dropped by to share their thoughts on the impending Trump White House tariffs. Connecticut News junkie, columnist, and Substack.com blogger Terry Cowgill dropped by with his weekly update, including the rising profile of Connecticut Democratic Senator Chris Murphy. So my fear continues is they just don't get it. They just don't get it. And when I mean they, when I use the word they, as well-intentioned as all these thousands of people were here in Connecticut over the weekend, and I guess tens or hundreds of thousands of folks all across the U.S., protesting the Trump White House and Donald Trump's policies and Trump the man and his companies and everything. I get that. I understand that. That's a wonderful thing you can do in our rich tradition of peaceful yet boisterous protests here in the country. But, you know, I heard and watched these protesters over the weekend say, well, Trump's crazy. Trump's nuts. Trump's this. Trump's that. And I got to thinking to myself, no, maybe you're nuts. Maybe you don't get, oh, what do you mean, Paul? See, here's my question as we start off today on a brand new week, brand new Monday on this April 7th, 2025. Who doesn't get it? Who's actually nuts? Who's the crazier in this whole thing? I will submit to you that amid all the anger, you can peel all that anger away. You can say this, that, and the other. I will submit to you that a lot of the protesters out there don't get it. I'm sorry, it doesn't mean you're not passionate about what you believe. It doesn't mean that you can't protest. The more protesters, the better, as far as I'm concerned, on either side. That's a rich American tradition. But sometimes people vote the way they do, the other side does, because they perceive the side looking at them doesn't get it. And I watch and I listen to these protesters and I understand how angry they are. That's not the question. But of the two main sides we have in our politics here, not just in Connecticut and in Fairfield County and in Connecticut and in the nation, but in the world, basically, which side do you think doesn't get it more? Because to a point, both sides can have deficits in understanding the other. But I watched all the media coverage of these protesters. No, I didn't go to a protest on the weekend. But, you know, when I see the headlines, well, Connecticut joins 19 states in suing the Trump White House. And again, you get Governor Lamont up there. You get William Tong up there saying that we're on the right side of this and we're going to fight. Okay, that's fine. Do you ever think that you're not? Last time I did the math, 19 is significantly less than half of 50. So it is kind of funny, isn't it, that you look at these headlines that say, well, 19 states are suing the White House. And I sit there, naturally, being the paid contrarian that I am, and say, well, wait a minute, 31 states aren't. And who is really not getting it here? Because it's easy to sit here and everybody's in their own little cocoon in Connecticut. Everybody's in their own little shell. And William Tong is acting like Batman and Captain Marvel and whatever Marvel superheroes you want to make there. And so is Governor Lamont. Well, we're going to fight for this. Hey, guys and gals, did you ever think that Connecticut is out of step with the other part of the country? I'm not saying it is. But have you kind of stepped back and thought that despite the blue haze that occupies this state, maybe we're out of it? Because consider this, as many people as hate in this state as hate Donald Trump, and that's fine, I understand that. The guy won in 2016. He won in 2024, and he almost won. He came damn close in 2020 by an aggregate count of 40,000 votes. So who's out of step? Who are the crazies in this scenario here? Is it all those MAGA people, or is it maybe some of the people at these protests over the weekend? Maybe Connecticut doesn't get it. Maybe the governor, maybe the attorney general, maybe the lieutenant governor, maybe all these other leaders that came and said some of the dumbest things on the planet over the weekend, and I'll read them and tell you why they're dumb. Maybe they don't get it. Did they ever think of that? So I ask this to start off the merry little program this afternoon, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. As far as the political divide in this country, and even here in Connecticut, is our leadership maybe the leadership that doesn't get it? Instead of yelling and screaming in MAGA types, and you can do that, that's fine if that's your opinion, did you think that maybe the other part of the country looks at Connecticut and says, oh, those people say, come on in, all the illegals, they can come on in. Oh, those people are defending pretty much anything up to and including drive-through abortions. Those are the people in that state that have cities where their students' academic performance is in the pits. But remember, we sit up here, at least our elected leaders, doing the majority on their high and holy chair and say, no, 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 we know better. The other half of the country sucks rogues. Really? Who doesn't understand who? You know, I honestly do feel bad for some of the Democrats in this state because they don't get it. They don't understand it. I'm not saying that they can't be on the opposite end of a policy battle. No, 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 no. That's what politics is about, but they don't get the whole idea of perception and reality. They don't get it. And again, you know, kudos to those people that went out and protested Trump all over the state, 3,000 or 4,000, whatever, that's great. Guess what? It doesn't mean anything. It means nothing. There's a shock. A bunch of people in a blue state don't like Donald Trump. Oh, my God, get the defibrillator. What did that accomplish? It's just like Cory Booker. God bless him. Cory Booker talked for 25 hours last week. So? Oh, sorry. My God. Corey, you ever notice how many times Cory Booker is the next big thing, and then he just kind of fizzles out like yesterday's soda? But it's sad. It really upsets me because the modern-day Democrats here in this state, especially, and around the country, they don't understand it. They don't get it. You think the Republicans are crazy. I would submit to you that Democrats are crazier. Why do I say that? All right, all you had to do was look over some of the headlines here and hear me out on this, because this is the whole idea of perception being reality. And this is my theory of crazy versus broken. In New York State, the governor in nearby New York wants to lower the amount of infractions that people can be pulled over for mechanically because it causes too much tension with minority communities. Yeah, you can read that. Also, the mayor of Rochester laced into his police department over the weekend because they dared to assist ICE in a criminal, illegal operation. In Maine, you've got a Republican woman up there in Maine who has been censured because how dare she mention the name and use the likeness of a biological male who won a girls' athletic event. Can't do that. In Illinois, the Democratic governor of Illinois and other people there, they are threatening jail time to parents who homeschool their kids if they don't use the exact state curriculum there, which, by the way, is failing kids. This one is so ridiculous, even black Democrats are saying, what are you doing here? Chris Murphy's latest one. I love the outrage of the day from Chris Murphy. He's referring to President Trump. Quote, he's never done a hot second of economic analysis. Unquote. Okay, Senator. And you fill out a payroll for how many people? Listen, you can despise Trump all you want. It's got nothing to do with economics. He actually employs thousands of people. How many people do you employ? I love these people who say Trump doesn't know anything about business. Okay, and how many checks are you signing? Jasmine Crockett, she's the latest flavor, calling a disabled governor in the country Governor Hot Wheels. No, no, no. You people who are upset with President Trump, I get it. It's your party that's crazy. It's your party that was in favor of that transgender fencer that was given a victory by default last week when a biological woman didn't want a fencer. Yes, I know that on the grand scale of things, those are small stories, but they're not. And I'm not saying I love everything about the Republican Party, and I'm not saying I love everything about Donald Trump, but good God. Take off your blinders. Take off the sunglasses. Read the room. You think Trump's crazy? Well, guess what? More than half of the country thinks you're nuts. And it's not helping that you have no ideas on policy. Trump sucks. Trump sucks. Trump's bad guy. We know that. We know how you feel. But man, I have never seen. It's frightening how bereft the modern-day Democratic Party is when it comes to ideas. Oh, by the way, make sure more of your people vandalize Teslas. How dumb are these people? Now, you can say, well, how do you know they're dumb? Because they're not awake enough to see, to go online and understand that every Tesla out there comes with numerous video cameras. Can you be any dumber? And yet they keep doing it. Oh, and by the way, kudos to Rosa DeLauro. She, I think, is the only major Democrat who came out a couple of weeks ago and said, stop the vandalism on Teslas. It's not doing us any good. But any time a high-profile Democrat in Hartford, in Washington, gets asked by a reporter, Senator or Congresswoman or Congressman, what do you think of the vandalism on Teslas? They say nothing. Kudos to Rosa. She said something. But some of these people in the Democratic Party, especially in D.C., are so dumb that they can say, you know what, I'm all for protest, but we have to draw the line at damaging other people's property. Proper protest in this country does not, nor should it ever, 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 ever involve harming a person's property. That's all I have to say. None of them are saying it. So, yeah, you can think Trump is crazy all you want, and you may be right. But look in the mirror, for God's sake, and Ned Lamont can get up there, and Dick Blumenthal can get up there, and all the constitutional officers can get up there. They can scream and yell and kick and scream and yell. And you know what? It won't mean a hill of beans until the great Democratic Party gets its head out of its posterior, where it's deeply buried right now. I hate to tell you, but it is. Jose in Shelton. Jose, how are you?
Hey, good afternoon, Paul. If my ears don't deceive me, you sound like a spokesman for the Republican Party.
I speak
the
truth.
What's the commission rate you're receiving?
I speak the truth. Sometimes, Jose, the truth hurts. It hurts, doesn't it? It hurts.
About the truth, Paul.
It hurts.
When you said the Democrats support drive-through abortion, that's false.
Well,
no Democrats.
They don't. It's everything close. Jose, that's a little satire on my part, but go ahead.
That's false.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
That's one thing where you're a spokesman for the Republican Party.
Yeah.
Another thing, why do you always call the Democrats the left?
They are.
Can you say the word Democrat? I'm going to give you an IQ test. Say the word Democrat.
Republican.
Yeah, I know your favorite Republicans, but here's the bottom line.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, sometimes you got to take off your Republican thinking hat, and you got to say the fact.
Yeah. The fact is, your great party is broken, Jose. You better fix it.
Broken.
You better fix it.
No, we're not broken. We're on the rebound. We're back, actually. We're back.
Even Jose, I gotta go. You even can't say it with a straight face. They're back, as my friend Jose, who is a normal Democrat. See, Jose doesn't fit into the, I wouldn't put Jose in the left ear. But apparently you got those lefties out there like AOC and Ilhan Omar and that new one, Jasmine Crockett. Oh, she's abuse. Welcoming CBS correspondent Zach Hudak to the program to give us an update from D.C. on the talks at the White House and also the tariff mania. Hey, Zach, it's Paul here at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. I'm doing very well. How about you?
Not too bad. I would imagine covering the White House and Mr. Trump today, kind of a busy, busy day. What's the buzz? What's the latest you're hearing there amongst all the reporters regarding the tariff situation? And how is it still being sold by the White House?
We are, as I'm sure the administration is, closely watching the markets today and have been ready to go live to cover any major turns in them. The spin from the White House has basically been trust in Donald Trump's plan. We've always said there would be some growing pains, but this is what's necessary in order to put pressure on these other countries, mm-hmm. to force them to not tariff our goods. So the messaging continues to be, hold on, this is going to end up for the best, but this is just a temporary period of pain for Americans financially.
Is the White House at all, Zach, worried about, cracks in the foundation here or cracks in the armor? Because you see there are some Republicans, maybe in tough districts grumbling in the House or some tough Senate seats coming up. Is the White House aware of that? Any grumblings you hear about that amongst your colleagues?
They're certainly aware of it. It's not something that they're talking publicly about, but it is something they're aware of and something that behind the scenes, we're having administration folks and allies of the president try to quell those concerns with members of Congress. But it is something that we see, particularly on the weekends, and I usually work on the weekends, almost every weekend there is some town hall that a member of Congress, often a Republican, is holding. And they have just been unlike anything we've seen in super recent time in terms of citizens, voters coming out and really being upset about what they're seeing. Now, I will put a caveat on that sure. Even at those Republican members events, it seems like oftentimes these are Democrats who are going and voicing their concerns. Mm-hmm. But it nonetheless just illustrates the pressure that these down ballot folks feel from everything that the president does. And that's even compounded more than in a typical scenario in D.C., because in this moment, the Republican Party is very much Donald Trump's party. There is no way to get away from that association if you're a
sure.
member, a Republican member. So it is something that if it's on no one else's mind, it is on the minds of those Republicans who are going to be up for re-election.
Yeah, and finally, Zach, the guest from CBS News, the Democrats still kind of looking for a leader here. I'm reading that, day-plus filibuster from Cory Booker, that might have pushed him up maybe into the heights with our own Chris Murphy here in Connecticut. Finally, are you hearing anything on that or not?
It's something we're already starting to get ready to cover and already watching really closely. And I think we expect the field to be as wide as it was for the Democrats in 2020, which was a cycle I covered, and a cycle that Cory Booker was running in. So I think there's no question that folks like him will, if they continue to have momentum, they will try to get in the race. But I think we also see, even on the other end of the country, Gavin Newsom has been doing a number of things to position himself, including starting a podcast where he has conservatives come on often. Clearly an attempt to win over some of the opposition. So
yeah.
I think what we can definitely expect is a wide field, and we're going to see over this next year lots of moves like that Cory Booker move, where these Democrats are trying to prove themselves to the National Party that they can be the voice of this new generation.
Zach Hudak, CBS News. Zach, thank you. Be safe there, and we'll check with you down the road. Thank you, sir.
Great talking to you.
Appreciate it. Zach Hudak, H-U-D-A-K. You see him and you hear him on CBS News. All right, let's see what we could shake out here from another expert. Return visit by a gentleman we've had on quite a few times, University of New Haven finance lecturer David Sacco on these tariffs, to tariff, to not to tariff, and another somewhat volatile day, somewhat not as crazy as the past few in the markets. Hey, David, it's Paul here. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Paul. How are you?
I'm good, and I would assume you are at no shortage of material for your classes. watching everything that's going on. Give us the long view here, David, before we try and peel this apart. What are your thoughts? I guess today there was some movement in the markets, but not as crazy as the first few days.
Yeah, I mean, well, actually, in some ways, the movement was even crazier in the sense that we traded in a sort of a 10% range from the high to the low, right? The last few days, we just kind of went down 4, 5, 6%. So today we would, you know, started down 3 or 4,
yeah,
then went up, you know, 4 or 5, and then, you know, kind of meandered a little bit. So look, this volatility is going to be here for a while, right? Because this thing is going to take, you know, my guess is a few months to sort itself out. You know, the market hates uncertainty, and the market certainly is at this point not clear to the market what Trump's strategy is. You know, and obviously it's taking people by surprise around the world, and it's going to be a bit of a readjustment. I mean, essentially the market is risky, and we are sort of seeing the manifestation of that risk in the last few days in these types of actions.
So, David, you and people who study this, I'm not trying to put you on the spot here, but you don't have any ideas or firm grasp here as to what the end game is for the president here, because I guess he's doing stuff that's what never been done before or done to this level. Well, what do you think of that?
So I think, you know, you're right. This has never been done before. So mm-hmm. I can share my opinion,
sure,
which is that I think this is ultimately Trump is trying to sort of reorder the trade relationship that we have with China. And in fact, you know, in one of my classes today, I pulled up the chart, right? So the U.S. economy is $25 trillion. China is second at $14 trillion. And then the next country in their list is Japan at $4 trillion. So
yeah.
I think, you know, his personal view is that, you know, the world has been very accommodative to China over the last 30 years, allowing them to enter, you know, all of our markets. And, you know, in some ways, he has a valid point in that China imposes trade restrictions that most other countries don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he now, whether or not, you know, the best way to do that is to basically take the whole world economy hostage, right? But then, you know, but remember, that's what when Trump sees a problem, he sort of says, I'm going to come up with an extreme solution to that problem,
yeah,
right? So, you know, he's got the Mike Tyson approach of, okay, I'm going to punch you in the mouth, and then we'll talk about how resolving it. So look, the markets love certainty. Markets hate uncertainty. If, you know, tariffs are bad, I mean, I will say that as, you know, someone who's taught economics and someone,
yeah,
who's traded markets for 40 years, tariffs are only an answer to the question of how do you ruin an economy. So if the end game is really tariffs, and I don't think it is, we're in bad shape. If the end game is using tariffs to try to renegotiate our trading agreements with China, and then by definition, the rest of the world, because everyone else will fall in line with what we do with China,
mm-hmm,
you know, then there might be some sense to that, but it's going to be a rocky ride. So, you know, unlike the COVID shock, which, you know, pretty much started and ended within a month because you, yeah, could sort of see what was going to happen, I'm not sure we're going to have that kind of clarity on this, you know, for 4, 5, 6 months.
David Sacco is the guest, oftentimes on this show, finance lecturer at the University of New Haven. You know, David, I've had some emails today, text messages and calls say, hey, this is great, bringing manufacturing back to the U.S. here, maybe over the course of several months or several years, if at all. But with that, David, right, comes a bunch of other stuff like, you know, labor costs and other costs. So, you know, it's great to say, hey, make it in America. But oftentimes that does come with higher prices, doesn't it?
Absolutely. If you want to make all the goods that we buy in America,
yeah,
get ready to pay a lot more for them. Okay, and that's, you know, and nobody wants that right now. You know, can you at the margins, you know, think about improving manufacturing at the margins? Can you think about some, you know, some industries that there's some strategic importance? But we're not, you know, you're not going to significantly change the dynamic of manufacturing. And I heard a great quote this weekend. So, you know, assume that, for instance, if Trump was actually able to bring back a large scale of manufacturing back to the U.S.,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
well, the fact of the matter is most of that manufacturing is going to be getting done by robots and AI, not,
yeah,
by hourly workers. So, you know, I think that's a little bit of a pipe dream. But, you know, there are probably some things at the margins that might make sense. But again, the tariffs as a policy don't make sense. And the idea that we're going to bring manufacturing back to America is also going to cause more economic harm than gain.
David, I've had some people call this show, and also I'm reading some of this, too, where people say, hey, yeah, you know what? We've had a huge trade deficit with some nations for decades, for years. Ideally, it would be better if we didn't, but that's really hard to get rid of. You buy that, or is the U.S. trade deficit, because we are who we are with these other nations, is it kind of a thing that would just stay there and not be harmful or not?
No, I mean, trade deficits in and of themselves are not bad or good. Right. So remember, what our trade deficit allows us to do is it allows our federal government to basically spend $2 trillion a year more than they have, because essentially all those dollars we're sending to China for the goods we buy from them, they are turning around and they're investing those dollars in U.S. Treasury. So they're effectively lending that money back to our government, so that our government can pay Social Security, that our government can provide student loans and provide all the other services. So it's you know, it's a symbiotic relationship. The trade deficit allows us to spend more money because we're the reserve currency, right? And that is a big deal. And I don't think that President Trump wants to jeopardize that. But, it is more complex than just saying, we have a trade deficit and then that's a bad thing. We also have a surplus of services that we, and that's, where Trump is getting a little cute is that he was sort of ignoring the services part of the trade balance equation in what we talked about last week. So it is more complicated. And again, it's trade deficits in and of themselves are not good or bad things. They're just the result of the way economic flows naturally work.
Interesting. And finally, David, the guys surrounding Mr. Trump financially, Howard Lutnick, Scott Bessent, what are the reputations of these guys in the finance world? What kind of messaging you think are they trying to give the president? Does he care? Are they just throwing their hands up in the air? His economic team, talk a little about them. Who are they?
Well, they're mostly a bunch of Wall Street types, right? Mm-hmm. So guys who have run hedge funds, guys who have run big brokerage companies. So, I think the issue is they all take sort of the transactional approach. Look, I worked on Wall Street for 30 years, and, in some ways you look at everything as being a transaction, right? How can I get the best deal in this particular situation and then move on to the next? Which, I think some of that in government is a good thing, right? Because we sort of have to fix some of these problems and you have to sort of take them on. But obviously it unnerves people because people are not used to the government acting this way, right? The U.S. government is usually not out there trying to bully nations, trying to get them to do what we want economically, there may be an argument that some of that might make sense, but the fact is it makes people uncomfortable. It makes our allies uncomfortable, our adversaries uncomfortable, but it also makes citizens uncomfortable because we're just not used to the government behaving this way.
Good stuff. Hey, David, thank you so much. David Sacco, University of New Haven finance lecturer, often guest on this show. David, good to chat with you. And something tells me, David, we'll soon be talking about this again, all right?
I have a feeling we will, Paul. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it. So my next guest sends me a list of topics he'd like to cover today. And I'm going to urge him right now on live radio to consult and sign up with a copyright attorney, Terry Cowgill, because first of all, Terry, how are you? How's everything going?
Not too bad. Raring to go on this Monday afternoon.
Good. Listen, Terry, get a copyright attorney because you have, quote, I haven't seen it anywhere else, Murphy Derangement Syndrome, MDS. I think, Terry, you're on to something. I think much like the great Pat Riley, copyrighted three-peat, I think you need to do this because you say that our esteemed junior senator's presence has increased on your X feed here. What's that about?
Yeah, well, it is remarkable because usually you see all these attacks on politicians ramp up in advance of elections. But Murphy was just, reelected in November. Yeah. So these attacks are really coming fast and furious. They're mostly coming from the usual places that you would expect, the Connecticut Republican Party, the West Hartford Republicans, who are have a very active X account.
Oh, yeah.
And another guy, Matt Corey, you know, who ran against Murphy.
Yeah.
And I think ran against him another time, too. And he also ran for John Larson's seat. He's kind of he's run for it a lot. He won't let go of this either. So they come up and everything Murphy does or says, you know, they put up a video of it and they say, doesn't he have anything better to do? Doesn't he care about, you know, the citizens of Connecticut? And why is he involved in all these national issues? And it's pretty amazing, I think, because they can't let it go. And they are so obsessed with him that it did occur to me that, you know, if there's such a thing as Trump derangement syndrome and its original predecessor, Bush derangement syndrome, that's where you know, we said 2 weeks ago, that's exactly where it came from. Then why not Murphy derangement syndrome? Because, boy, there's a lot of people who won't like Matt Corey. You lost. You let go. Give it a rest for a while, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I do think that enough is enough at a certain point. But, of course, they have a First Amendment right to complain about it as much as they want.
And listen, you and I have talked about this, Terry. Mr. Murphy's party seems to be, as we speak right now, bereft of a national leader, a national unifying voice. So, heck, why not get out there? Maybe it's him. Maybe it's Cory Booker. Who knows? So, listen, Mr. Murphy is what, 51, 52? He's a perfect age, and he's got his sights set on higher things. Nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. And, you know, he's clearly positioning himself to fill the void because, obviously, I mean, Schumer is just, you know, he's a very smart guy. I met him when he first ran for the Senate because I was covering politics in Dutchess County, New York, and he came up and spoke. And he worked the room masterfully.
Yeah.
Very smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's in his 70s. You know, it's probably time to give somebody else a shot. And Murphy is, you know, I think one of the reasons that they don't like him, that the Connecticut Republicans and others, is that he's actually pretty good at what he does, which is being a partisan Democrat.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's playing a role. And he's very good at it. He's getting a lot of attention for it. And you're right. It could be him leading the party in the Senate next. It could be Cory Booker, who also is going to, you know, I mean, if you stand up and give a 25-hour speech without even using the bathroom, then you've got to know that, you know, you're pretty serious about wanting to advance yourself. And I believe Booker is 55.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're about the right age because they're not too green, not too wet behind the ears. And they got just enough gray eminence here, although Murphy dyes his hair, obviously. But there's nothing wrong with a little gray hair, I think. You know,
I think you need to do a column on that. By the way, you can read Terry's stuff at Substack.com, his blog, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates. Of course, he's also readable, if you will, on the Connecticut News Junkie. Like me, earlier in the show with two or three different guests, Terry, everybody talking tariffs here. The markets were a little less crazy here. Listen, I'll tell you one thing about the Trump White House. You and I both know, for me, there's no shortage of show prep. And for you, there's no shortage of stuff to write about.
Certainly true. But, you know, I've been saying all along, once Trump started putting these tariffs in or threatened them, I said to myself, well, can the president unilaterally impose tariffs on these nations? And I looked it up and the law allows him to do tariffs unilaterally in the event of an emergency. And I thought, well, is this really an emergency? I think you could make a very good case that we don't really have an emergency, at least not in the way that most people would define it.
Mm-hmm.
So where is Congress? I mean, Congress really is the ones who have the authority to issue tariffs, no matter, you know, emergency or not. So why isn't Congress moving to stop this? Well, the civil explanation is that the Republicans control Congress, both houses. So they're not going to want to do this. But you know what? There are now some Republicans in the Senate who I think are afraid for their own jobs. In the case of Rand Paul in Kentucky, you know, he's a libertarian, basically.
Yeah.
He would
yeah.
be really opposed to this.
Mm-hmm.
Mitch McConnell, his His the senior senator from Kentucky is also opposed to this, and he obviously doesn't like Trump either. And then you got people like Chuck Grassley in Iowa, and my senator here in Texas, Ted Cruz.
There you go, huh? Outspoken. Wow.
You probably saw him, right? I mean, he was very adamantly against these, and he said, "I've been talking to people; they're going to be hurt by the." You know, he doesn't want to lose his job, although he was just reelected in November, yeah. So he's safe for a while. But I said to myself, well, why don't they do something about it? And sure enough, they are putting together a bill. I don't know whether they'll be able to get 60 votes, because that's what you need in the Senate now for anything even remotely controversial.
Mm-hmm.
But Trump has threatened to veto it if it does pass. And then in which case they would need 66 votes. And I think that's probably a stretch.
Yeah, and of course, Terry, the threat is, if anybody signs on to that, well, maybe we should, primary them. And of course, that'll come right out of the White House. And, you know, Terry, all this circles back to the fact that we're in such a weird part now in history where you have the party that represents 50% of the country, give or take a point or two in the Democratic Party, that is just kind of in this stasis field. There is no real movement there because A, they may not know what they can do, and B, they just don't have the numbers, even if they knew what to do.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's a power imbalance, and I think that either the current situation with the legislative branch and the executive branch, it really kind of points out why a lot of times Americans prefer divided government.
Yeah. You know,
we've had divided government for much of your life and my life,
mm-hmm.
and where we have seen Democrats. And I think a lot of people don't recall, but during the Reagan years, you know, when they got so much done that Reagan wanted to get done, my recollection was there was a Democratic House the entire time of Reagan's presidency.
Tip O'Neill.
Yeah, and I believe that the Republicans only controlled the Senate then, maybe 4 years out of those eight.
Mm-hmm.
So he still got an awful lot done in divided government. And we seem to like it that way for some reason, so we don't want to invest too much power in one person.
No, and so. just to close, Terry, as you were coming on, I glanced up to my monitor here in the studio here, and I saw a promo for a CNN town hall, 9 p.m. on Wednesday night with Bernie Sanders. So there you go.
Oh, boy, yeah. The ultimate populist. Chris Murphy's saying we need to go, you know, in a populist direction. So Sanders, a guy who have done that. One other thing.
Yeah.
And that is, I see Gino Auriemma is taking some flack from Bob Ryan for running up the score.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Yes. And your thoughts would be? Go ahead.
Well, I don't know. You know, I've been a coach. I used to be a soccer coach once. And we wiped out somebody, and I wasn't thinking, I was just thinking of cycling everybody in
and getting
my best players in for garbage time.
Yeah.
And I think we wound up winning by like 10-1 or something. And I said to myself at the end, God, I mismanaged that. You know, I think I ran up the score.
Yeah.
So I can sympathize with Gino.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, listen, it happens. I think he's pretty good at what he does, right? All right.
Oh, I think the record speaks for itself.
Yeah.
And Mr. Ryan did go on later and clarify that he thinks Gino is a god. He just doesn't like the way he handled the running up the score of this particular game.
All right, that's fair. I used to know Bob Ryan years ago when I was at BU. Terry Cowgill's the guest. Check him out, ConnecticutNewsJunkie.com and also Substack.com. Red meat for mushy moderates. Hey, Terry, be good. Take care of yourself, and we'll chat next week.
Thanks very much.
Bye. All right, Terry, be good there. All right.